And returning to Gaza, where the number of people displaced by fighting is continuing to rise. Hospitals are overrun and the UN is seeing its services come under increasing pressure. More than 100,000 people are now seeking support from the organisation. That's the fallout of Israeli evacuation warnings now issued to 43% of the territory. The Beit Hanun area is now coming under attack. Yesterday, a girls' school in Maghazi refugee camp was shelled, it following 2 days of ground attacks and dozens of deaths in the Shujaiya area. Chris Gunness works with the United Nations Relief and Works Agency. I've been asking him if people should be surprised that a school was hit, given the density of the area and the manner in which militants are conducting themselves within the Gaza Strip.
Well, to be very clear, I'm not saying that it was direct targeting. To say that, you'd have to prove intentionality. You'd have to say the person who pulled the trigger was deliberately targeting a United Nations facility with a UN flag on it. And I'm absolutely not saying that. But basically, you're right. In the confusion of war, it is inevitable that civilians are caught up. The statistics show that the vast majority of those being killed and wounded are women, children, men who are civilians. If you look at the number of UNRWA's civilian installations that have been damaged, about 70, again, evidence that civilians will come in harm's way. We've had this direct hit on a school, but in the Gaza fighting 5 years ago, again, we were hit directly, in that case, sadly, with white phosphorus. On one occasion, our main warehouse was burnt to a cinder. And recently, we've had the second discovery of militants hiding rockets in our schools, which I might add have been closed down for the summer. But nonetheless, it's an illustration of the way that the neutrality of UN compounds and civilian infrastructure can be so easily compromised, which is why we condemn these violations in the strongest possible terms, and we call on all the warring parties to respect the sanctity of civilian life, the inviolability of UN premises and property, and of course we call on those parties to respect their obligations under international humanitarian law to protect humanitarian workers.
How difficult is it for you to convince Hamas, the Al-Aqsa Brigade, other fighters, not to be located close to or in your facilities? Is there a tension on the ground surrounding that?
Well, certainly we have made it clear whenever we can that they must make sure that civilians are not going to be put in harm's way. But if you look at the fighting and if you look at what's going on in Gaza, another logic is there, and that is the logic of war, and it's the logic of survival. It's presented both in Gaza and in Israel as an existential struggle. And if you see it in those Manichaean terms, it's very easy to understand why respect for civilian life diminishes to the point where we're seeing unimaginable suffering. We estimate that there are 25,000 children who are deep in trauma, for example. So the situation for civilians is absolutely appalling.
What about the ability of UNRWA to cope, Chris, and in particular to cope when you have a reality that these people simply cannot leave the Gaza Strip? They're trapped there.
Absolutely. I mean, Gaza is unique in the annals of contemporary warfare in being a conflict with a fence around it. There's nowhere to run. There's nowhere safe in Gaza. You know, our installations have been hit. We saw at 5 to 5 in the evening 2 days ago, a shell coming directly through a school wall where there were 300 people sheltered. And as I say, militant groups are hiding rockets in our schools. It's to be condemned in the strongest possible terms. There is nowhere safe in Gaza. And, you know, pity the people of Gaza, because in the present circumstances, they are trapped inside a fence. There's nowhere to run. They're deeply traumatized, which is why we back and continue to back the Secretary General's call for a ceasefire. And let me also add that once the guns fall silent, there has to be engagement with the idea of addressing the underlying causes of the conflict in Gaza. A return to the status quo after this, where every couple of years there's an upsurge in violence, 6 million civilians in Israel are terrorized by barrages of rockets coming out, and 1.7 to 1.8 million people, 54% of whom are children in Gaza, are terrorized by this barrage that's coming in to one of the most densely populated areas of the world. That has to stop. It's unsustainable. One of the things that has to come out of this appalling conflict is the notion that underlying causes will be addressed in a manner which makes sure that it never happens again.
Can I ask you about the aid situation? Over the past 15 days in this programme, we've been told by numerous representatives from the Israeli side that there is no blockade in Gaza. What is the reality in terms of aid, medicines, getting supplies in to Gaza?
Well, first of all, there's been almost no exports from Gaza for since June 2007. So if that isn't a blockade, I'm not entirely sure what is. But to be entirely fair to the Israeli authorities, they are allowing us to take in the emergency provisions now that we need. And I have to tell you that the first 15 trucks of an airlift from Dubai, which came in overnight a few nights ago to the airport in the Jordanian capital, Amman, that's due to come in to Gaza today. We're hoping to get the coordination for that. That airlift consists of 45,000 mattresses, tens of thousands of blankets and hygiene kits, and it's very urgently needed. Having said that, the blockade is in place. We have to get every brick, every bean, every morsel of aid that goes into Gaza has to go through a tortuous approval system. And what we need to do is, as I say, when all this is over, we have to look at addressing the underlying causes of this conflict, which includes dealing with the blockade.
Chris Gunness of the United Nations Relief and Works Agency speaking to me a short time ago.